Welcome to the Rise and Shout podcast, episode 134. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined in this episode by Jason Franchuk of the Daily Herald. We talk about the Hoops team and their recent resurgence. We focus on Matt Carlino and what has made the difference for him the last couple of weeks. We also talk about Skylar Halford and how he has been a little bit of a surprise in helping out the Cougars. We also briefly talk about their tournament chances. We then focus on football and talk about Robert and I's offense and whether it's sustainable and whether we might see any differences this year, this upcoming season. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. You can always catch us on iTunes. You should check us out at loyalcougars.com, and you're going to listen to Jason and I talk right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout podcast, Jason Franchuk of the Daily Herald. Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It feels like finally basketball season. I have to admit, I'm kind of a basketball guy. Grew up playing it more than football and then went to the University of Kansas. So this is kind of my favorite time of year now that BYU is finally playing some good basketball again. It looks like it could be a run into March. It'll be pretty cool right now for everybody.
Yeah, now that's you set me up perfectly, as we call that in the business. That's a perfect segue, Jason.
I dropped it by him. I've been learning from Collins' work. He does with basketball. I do it with my words.
That's right. That's right. So one of the things, this recent turnaround after a pretty lousy losing streak where team just seemed very disconnected to each other and, you know, fans and everyone wondering if things are kind of broken, and now all of a sudden they get this winning streak. But there have been kind of different players stepping up at different times in this winning streak. But let's focus first on Carlino, who the past couple games has looked, I would say, not from a scoring perspective, though he did that, but I think overall he's looked as good as any point this season as far as the complete game goes. Do you think that coming off the bench is a good long-term solution for him, or do you think it's a matter of time before he plays his way back into a starting lineup?
Well, I lead in by saying this, Adam, and I've said this before when people on the street or emails or whatever have asked me about this. Matt is not the divisive figure inside the program that he is sometimes assumed to be by people outside the program. And by that I mean is they know they need Matt to play well. Matt is an extra gear for this team. And, you know, Matt is not one of those guys, you know, we've talked before, and I'm not always complimentary. I can criticize, but I don't mean to come off as this total cheerleader on this. But if Matt goes off for 30 and BYU loses, Matt's still a pretty mad guy and pretty upset and distraught and feeling like he didn't do enough. So this isn't the case of somebody who's been trying to go out and get their own numbers regardless of the team result, if that, hopefully that makes sense here. And I guess going forward with Matt, they've got him now in this comfortable role where I think Matt likes having maybe a little bit less pressure, and he feels like he can come into the flow of the game, find his role when he gets on the floor. He's a little tougher maybe to match up with for some teams because they continue to focus on Hawes and Collinsworth and Mika or whoever, and then Carlino comes in and can maybe find some different looks. But the other aspect is Matt is such a different defensive player right now for that team. He's helping them both ends of the floor. And I think Matt, and Dave Rose has said this, Matt Carlino earlier in the year when BYU was going through that losing streak, it was not just a coincidence that as Matt slumped, that team as a whole slumped, especially in the win-loss column. But now they've got him, again, he's in a groove, but he's also in this situation where he will go out and do whatever it takes for this team, not just offensive stuff. He puts so much of his identity of helping this team as far as scoring the basketball, and now he understands the value of getting a steal, getting an extra rebound, things like that, that have really helped take this team to a new level.
Yeah, and it really has, at least over the last few games. We'll see a big game coming up here with Gonzaga not too far in the future. We'll see how that pounds out. Shifting from Carlino, one of the things has been over the past couple of seasons, has been maybe an issue with depth, especially this year in the front court, where when Mika's gets in foul trouble, sometimes Sharp, not that he doesn't try and play well, but sometimes just the other team's bigs are just, he is very much outsized. What does that mean going forward, especially when we talk about Mika? I mean, we've had players in the past, including Mr. Davies, have trouble staying on the floor sometimes with foul trouble. Can this team win big games like against a Gonzaga if Mika can't stay on the floor for more than 20 minutes because of foul trouble?
That's true. And let me real quick go back at him. I didn't mean to kind of sideswipe your part of the question. I think Matt can stay in that six-man role, but I think he's going to be a guy that plays starters minutes. Now, where that leads in the depth as far as Mika and others, they are a shallow team as far as number of guys they will consistently play. We've kind of seen Frank Bartley fall off the map a little bit here, and he may come back. But, hey, it's gone a lot of ways with a lot of guys. There were times Skylar Hallford was barely playing. Josh Sharp wasn't hurt up at all at the beginning of the season. Now he's come on and shown his experience and played some minutes, especially when Eric was out. They need Eric, and I will be the first to say that I didn't expect Eric to have this much of an impact for this team right off the bat. You know, I knew they would use him. I knew kind of talking to people around the program, and I knew the type of basketball, the style they played at Lone Peak, that Eric was walking into a really comfortable situation. He knew the guys, but more importantly, they played the style that Eric likes. I mean, it was basically four guards around him. Eric at Lone Peak as well. And remember, that was such a great Lone Peak team he was on his senior year. And Eric didn't have to be the center of attention. They had TJ Haws, Nick Emery, a variety of guys around him. So Eric was walking into a beautiful situation for him in Provo to just be able to do his thing. And he's done it rather well. I would say freshman year, he is more polished offensively than even Brandon Davies when Brandon was that young of a player. Now Eric's got a long ways to go. You make the parallel about foul trouble. But I think the biggest thing with Eric right now is, one, blending back in with this particular team, because he missed about 2.5 games. He missed the clear-cut 2 games, but it was that San Diego game when he missed early in the second half. His hip and I believe a knee was bugging him at that point. So he basically missed the second half of that game. So he went 2.5 games. BYU was able to win some games, learn how to play without him. But again, we talk about extra gears with having Carlino available. They needed that extra gear with Eric in, because he's the real true low post presence for this particular team right now. Josh Sharp doesn't really provide that. Nate Austin just is not comfortable despite his height. He's just not that kind of a player, back to the basket type or the defensive end. But I go back, if Eric can get healthy again, I think his foul trouble will be greatly alleviated, one, by him being healthy. I think that's what even caused him problems at San Francisco last Thursday, was he was kind of hobbling around and everything. The other thing, again, I go back to these guards. They're playing such better perimeter defense. It's going to take at least one foul a game, I believe, off Eric's hands where he can be more aggressive, and I think they can maybe even set him up more to be a second-half aggressor where he goes in the first half. Remember, against San Francisco, he only went to halftime with one foul. He didn't play a ton of minutes, but it wasn't because of foul trouble. I think he was getting his endurance back. But then the second half, he was hobbled, picked up four fouls, ended up fouling out anyway. So they've got to find a way to get him healthy. It'd be interesting to see with this Portland game coming up. Portland's not the biggest team in the world. If they can somehow get Eric, you know, in a rhythm, but also not use him a ton of minutes and then get him ready for that Gonzaga game Saturday. But yeah, again, this is not the deepest Dave Rose team, but one thing they have done, again, going back to Carlino, is they found a sixth-man scoring punch that some of Rose's best teams have had. So that may be as valuable as anything, but that perimeter defense, one more time, has got to continue to thrive and help those interior players stay out of the foul trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. One player that's been, I mean, there are a lot of jokes on Twitter about him looking like your accountant, but Skylar Hallford has been, I think, maybe a little bit of a surprise to some. Everybody knew that he could score and shoot, but they were kind of, maybe he was thought of as kind of a one trick pony. Now it's been a few games since he had his big scoring games, but when I watch the games, I see a guy that hustles on defense. He's not as maybe as good a defender as some of the other perimeter players, but he's not a total liability either. And on offense, he's somebody that, you know, can get his shot off and either through a dribble drive, and especially, of course, the spot-up three-pointer. What is this what they expected the coaching staff out of Holford for this role to him to play? It's some of a, maybe a surprise to the fans, but is this really a surprise to the Cougar coaching staff?
Well, I think they've been pleased that his three-point shooting's coming along. You know, I did a story on Skyler a couple weeks ago, or yeah, I guess it is almost 2 weeks ago now. And he was two of 12 to start his three-point career at BYU, and this is a guy who shot nearly 50%. But I think the best thing Skyler has done for this team this year, and maybe it will be for the rest of the season, and I believe he'll have good games going forward, but the example he set against San Diego there in the home game, not only scoring the 28 points, which is wonderful for that team and really helped them out after, you know, as they're coming out of this losing streak, but then also the defense he played on Johnny D. And Johnny D is just a really good catch and shoot type guy. The Toreros run a lot of stuff for him. They run a lot of screens for him to try and get him open. And the way Skyler was just the Energizer Bunny, so to speak, and just kept chasing him and chasing him and chasing him, along with, again, scoring, that set quite an example for a lot of those guys, that you don't just have to save it for the offensive end. You know, I think I don't necessarily know a Kyle Collinsworth needed that. Kyle's been playing better defensively even before that game. But I think for a guy like Carlino, maybe not a spoken message was needed, but that was a good unspoken lesson that, hey, you can thrive at both ends of the floor and do it all in the same night and help this team in a variety of ways. And to see, I think Johnny D that night went 2 of 11. Chris Anderson was 2 of 10, 2 of 11, somewhere in that range. So all of a sudden, you've got San Diego's best two scorers, basically 4 of 24, 4 of 25, somewhere in there from the field. And, hey, that helped a ton. So Skyler really did a great service for himself, not only minutes by that kind of production, but again, it set the tone for the rest of that team. Now, has he been a surprise? Maybe a little bit, just coming out of the junior college level. You kind of wonder how guys are going to thrive and find roles, and BYU's had some success. You can go back to Keenan Young. They've clearly been able to put some junior college players out there. Travis Hansen, I don't know if Skyler's necessarily on that level as his career goes on, but hey, BYU had two junior college kids last year who just didn't pan out at all, and both have already left. And the names are escaping me. Sorry, I'm getting over the flu here. But Delgado and Ambrosino. I'm sorry, Augustin Ambrosino. So they lose those guys. And so the junior college is kind of a crapshoot, really, in what you're going to get. But Skyler's energy level is exactly what they expected. And Dave Rose said after one of the games that, hey, Skyler's not perfect, but he tries hard. He's consistent with his effort all the time that he's on the floor. And so that's a big deal for this BYU team. And also, I think he's a great practice presence because of that. So I think sometimes the stuff we talk about, stuff you don't see in the box scores, I think Skyler's day-to-day stuff is what's really helped this program too, because I think they've also been a better practice team this year as well. And I think we're starting to see the dividends of that payoff here right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that'll benefit them long-term. Last week, my brother and I on our podcast were very pessimistic about their tournament chances. And a couple of people on Twitter questioned our pessimism. So what, from your perspective with this win streak, what do you think they have to do? I mean, Lunardi, you can look at some of the prognostications, but it's still very early. What do you think they have to do? They have to, you know, quote-unquote run the table? Do they just have to beat Gonzaga once? Or is this, at this point, with the losses they've endured, I don't want to say their only chance, but it might be they just have to win the tournament at the end of the season to really get into to March Madness?
Well, I'll say this, and I've said this to a few people, and some agree, some don't. I'm a fan of the West Coast Conference brand. I think it's a good league that gets respect nationally, especially when you look at a Gonzaga. I think people respect what St. Mary's has done over the last few years. Not this year. They're not as good this year. But I think on the whole, a first or second place in the West Coast is solid. On that note, as Mark Few pointed out the other day, and I've pointed out as well separately, the teams in this league just aren't as good. So, you know, BYU cannot afford an 11-5 type of year in the West Coast Conference this particular year and get away with that to get into the tournament, especially the struggles they have in the non-conference play. But I said before this road trip that they went on to the Bay Area, that if BYU could take 3 of 4 on the road over the next 2 weeks, it wasn't going to make them a lock for the tournament, but it certainly puts them in the equation. And right now, of course, they swept the series with San Francisco and Santa Clara. So now, hey, they're 2 for 2. To get to 3 of 4, pretty simple, right? I mean, they go and beat Portland. If that happens on Thursday, they're already there. Portland, of course, beat Gonzaga, so that gets a little respect. And going to Child Center, it's not an incredibly difficult place to play, and BYU's won there twice. But still, it's something good for BYU to be 3 of 3, 3 wins in a row on the road. But I think if BYU gets that Portland win, plays strong at Gonzaga, they certainly cannot afford to have another 20-point loss. They can't afford another Utah game at this point in the year. But I think they go 3 of 3, play close, especially if they win, of course, at Gonzaga, changes the equation totally. But I think they're right in the cusp. Now, this takes me back, Adam, to when I was going into college. You know, I'm in high school and I'm applying for colleges, and the reason I make this point is it's kind of like when you take ACT or the SAT, those standardized tests, and then your grade point average. There's a sliding scale right now. So BYU didn't fare as well as they would have liked in the non-conference. So let's call that their GPA, or let's call that their SAT score. Now their GPA needs to be awfully good. So I think they're going to need I don't think anything less than 15-3 in this league right now is going to make it tough. They're just going to put themselves in a situation because I know I'm being long-winded, but there's so much at play here. I think what BYU needs to do is trying to get to 15-3 or 14-4 as fast as they can here, because what will happen is if they're really low on that bubble, then if the conference tournaments come around, if upstarts start winning these things and upsets happen and all that stuff, BYU gets knocked further and further back. So they're really playing to get as high on that bubble as they can. So I'm going to, as long-winded as I am again, I'm going to say 14-4, considering they've already got 2 conference losses. But I think they've got to win at either St. Mary's or Gonzaga, one of the two, to really put themselves in a solid situation, assuming they take care of business everywhere else. I could see where people are pessimistic, though, but I think BYU's RPI numbers, their strength of schedule, look pretty good, especially when you see Iowa State still really good, Wichita State still playing really good, UMass has been really solid, Oregon's falling off the map a little bit, but that won't necessarily kill BYU. But so I'll say 14-4, and they're really in the picture then.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So
am I long-winded enough? I mean, you can edit me as you wish, and people are probably like, man, don't have this guy on again. I totally get it, but I love being on it, so I try and think of 100 ways to say it.
No, that's good, because I think you're right on the 14-4, 15-3. That's to be in the discussion, you have to do it. Won't guarantee anything. I mean, the only guarantee is at this point, winning the conference tournament. But I do think their chances are probably better than my brother and I gave them last week. Before we let you go, wanted to talk football real quick, Jason. We got into the season. People have had time to calm down, maybe after the bowl loss and some other things, and then people start looking forward to next year. Some of that's to do, of course, signing day and recruiting, but a lot of it just is looking at the current roster, and you'll see websites like ours at Loyal Cougars and others starting to preview positions. The position I wanted to pick your brain on was wide receiver. So you look at, obviously, Hoffman's leaving and one of the best wide receivers BYU's ever had, certainly statistically, and you look at what's left, and you know, you have Matthews and Oppo returning, who played significant roles in the past. And then you've got Kurtz, the JC transfer. As you look at that group, and let's throw in the tight ends too, all the pass catchers, you could say besides Hoffman and Matthews when he was healthy, that group did not play up to expectations. Is this going to be an ongoing problem for the next season, or do you think this is the type of group that could, there's some folks in there that maybe could step up and fill that intermediate wide receiver role that, quite frankly, nobody stepped up and filled after Hoffman and Matthews last season?
Yeah, I think BYU will continue to have problems at receiver. I think it's still one of those spots that they finally got the quarterback play going with Taysom making good throws. Losing Cody is such a big deal. It was interesting to watch film with some people, and they were showing me a few things, and just the tension Cody drew was the toughest thing to replicate for next season. He was just able to, even if he was a decoy and a great one at that, he was one of those guys that you had to always watch him, you always had to scheme for him, and it left other guys open, and BYU wasn't always able to take advantage of those things. And then some of the touchdown catches Cody made last year were simply amazing. So he's going to be a tough guy to replace. They need Taysom to play better. I don't put it on one position, though. I think a lot of this is really going to come down to Robert and I, this offense, and even the defense really getting together and deciding how do they make this offense work a little more efficiently, because we all know, hey, they were running a ton of plays, but there were times they needed to slow it down, and they didn't. There were times they needed to just run some clock, and those things weren't working. So it's a big look in the mirror and a look in the stat books for a lot of them. I think Kurtz is going to help this team. I'm curious to see what Ross has in him to finish up his career. He's coming off shoulder surgery now, so I don't know yet what his spring football forecast looks like. Maybe minimal to none at this point. He's been through this before. I think they're going to miss a Falslev. You know, they'll miss a Sky Ridley. Some of the day-to-day consistency they were able to get out of those guys in practice on the field. They weren't the greatest athletes, but, you know, you kind of knew what you were getting with them, and that's going to be the toughest thing for a guy like Kurtz to come in and jump right into. So I think it'll be one of those positions that they need consistency from Taysom. Taysom said it after the bowl game. He needs to be a better passer. They need to throw the ball better, because otherwise teams are just going to stack the box. And until that happens, the offensive line is going to be an issue, and we all know it's kind of a domino effect from there. But I think Cody is going to be one of those guys that, as much as people realize they miss him right now, I think he's going to be even more missed next year when some of those throwing windows in the receivers are even tighter, because Cody wasn't there to maybe alleviate some of that pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be unfortunate. Unfortunately, I think there'll be some adjustments, that growing pains, if you will. But hopefully spring ball and some of that will at least get him a chance, especially with Kurtz and being in on campus already, to get some rhythm going.
And this is going to be a great spring ball. I have to admit, sometimes I don't get crazy about spring ball because so much can change. But I'm curious to see how this offense starts to develop. I was kind of give Robert and I a year under his system. You know, he's new running this offense, brand new coaches, players are kind of, you know, deer in the headlights all through fall camp. And then they changed their offensive line. There was a lot going on over that August to November, December period, even discounting spring ball last year. So this is going to be a very, very interesting time to kind of watch and follow these guys and see exactly what they're becoming.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, thanks, Jason, for coming on. We'll definitely have you on again soon, and hopefully it'll be talking about another significant run for the Cougars in West Coast Conference play, and maybe we'll be even more optimistic next time we talk about their tournament chances.
Yeah, sounds great. I know they feel like they've turned the corner, and, you know, just with my naked eye kind of watching these guys, their confidence level is definitely a lot different than it was 6 weeks ago.
Oh, absolutely. They have looked good the last couple of games. Well, thanks, Jason. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Ed.